Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We are podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org. You can hear the show there whenever you choose, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can also find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later in the program, we're going to be speaking about all kinds of animals, cats and dogs, and some local upcoming events. I'm delighted to welcome to the program today Craig Degenhart. He's known as the Black Tie Bicyclist. He's president of Bike ABQ. He's one of the co-founders of the Albuquerque Bicycle Advocacy Group for bike commuters and all kinds of bicyclists. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. Appreciate being here.
So bicycling is something that I suppose we all have to think about in an era of pollution, rising gas prices, and things like that. How did you become such a bicycle advocate and energetic bicyclist?
Well, I suppose it kind of started as a kid when, as most people say, when they get a bicycle, it means freedom. You get out of the parents' realm and you're able to travel around. And always was, unknowing to myself, a bicycle enthusiast. Rode bike here and there through the years. Then the street in front of my house, when we bought a house that was being used as a four-lane highway, and we were supposed to be able to park on it, but the traffic was so fast and so congested and all that we went to the city and said, hey, can you paint parking slots for us in front of our house? Oh, we don't do that in residential areas. And so I said, well, how else can I get this down? And there were bike lanes on some streets, so I said, let's put a bike lane in. And that one thing led to another, and the next thing you know, I'm being appointed to the Greater Albuquerque Bicycle Advisory Committee, and a bike lane's going on my street, and there are other streets that need bike lanes or new facilities. And then when I injured my knee and the doctor mandated that I have to ride a bike, that's when I started riding to work every day.
The doctor mandated that you ride a bike to strengthen your knee?
Strengthen my knee. A dog ran into my knee and tore the meniscus, and the recovery, I'm on crutches, barely able to walk a week afterwards, and he says, I want you on a bike as soon as possible.
And it worked.
And it worked.
So you live in Albuquerque, but you're also aware of Santa Fe and indeed of the whole entire state where bicycling is concerned. How well are our cities doing, especially Albuquerque and Santa Fe, having bicycle lanes and amenities for bicycle riders? How are we doing in these two cities?
Doing really well, getting better. Of course, Albuquerque's doing much better thanks to Bike ABQ. The League of American Bicyclists has awarded Albuquerque a bronze rating. The best is platinum, which only two communities in the entire United States, Davis, California, which banned bicycles from their campus back in the 70s.
They banned bicycles?
They didn't ban bicycles. No, they encouraged bicycles. They banned automobiles from the campus. And there are no cars there. I was just there a couple of weeks ago, and it was amazing to be on a campus that had roundabouts that thousands of bicycles go through in a 15-minute period during a class break. And there's no accidents. There's very few incidents with bicycles. Safe transportation.
So Albuquerque has a bronze rating. What gives a city a bronze rating? In other words, what do cities need to do to really make life safe and easy for bicyclists?
They need to encourage cycling. That's primarily what it boils down to. The league looks at several different criteria. Is there an education program for cyclists and motorists? Is there enhancements for the use of bicycles throughout the city? And that doesn't only mean on-the-road facilities, but it means bike parking and showers at offices. Are the laws geared to favor cyclists? And what people don't necessarily realize is that when the League of American Bicyclists was formed back in 1880 as a League of American Wheelmen, its sole purpose was to get roads paved. So the paved roads throughout the United States are due to the bicyclists.
Is that right?
And so before cars, there were no cars in 1880, and it was to make cycling easier to do. And so for the last 100 years or so, the cyclists have been kind enough to allow the motorists to use our streets.
Well, what it feels like is that the motorists are not always kind enough to let bicyclists use our streets. I mean, I don't know how many people I've met who have been either hit by cars, who just weren't paying attention, who were talking on their cell phones, who aren't used to seeing bicyclists. There are even people in cars who are hostile toward bicyclists.
And you're going to have that everywhere. I know cyclists that are hostile to motorists, too. It's a sad fate of human nature. However, through education, people learn that bicycles are, if not legally a vehicle, they are to be treated as a vehicle in all 50 states. Bicycles entitled to their share of the road in all 50 states, and including the interstate system. The Federal Highway Department has said that bicycles belong on interstates, except where local transportation groups have deemed it dangerous due to too many on and off ramps. And that would be part of Albuquerque and part of Las Cruces. But otherwise, especially out here in the West, you can ride a bicycle on the interstate.
Do you see many people doing that?
There's not many other roads for people to use, so I don't actually go out of, usually when I leave town, I'm on an airplane, so I don't see many on the freeway. But to get some places, that's the only way to get from Las Cruces to Albuquerque is on the freeway.
It's also, I mean, from when you think about how long it takes to go by car from Las Cruces to Albuquerque, that's a marathon on a bicycle.
There's a race. We're getting a whole world of cycling with all sorts of different aspects, and there's bicycle racing. There's a race that's very famous that puts the Tour de France to shame, and it's called the RAM, the Race Across America. They start in California, and they end in either Georgia or Virginia or Florida, and so that's 3,000 miles plus, depending upon what route they take for the year, and they do it in, I believe the winner has done it in 6 days, 3,000 miles in 6 days on a bicycle. There's an hour stop for sleep every day. That's all they get. They just ride, ride, ride. That's, yeah, totally
mind-boggling. Is that classified as mental illness?
In my opinion, it is. They wear diapers. The only time they stop is to change the diapers, and they have a car that falls along behind them, but there's definitely a big following of the RAM, and the people who win it are heroes.
So here we are in Santa Fe, and when I first moved here, somebody slammed into my car, and it was in repair for a long time, and I rode a bike. And I noticed that there were some really interesting phenomena, like you're on a bike lane, and then you get to an intersection, and when you go through it, there's no more bike lane on the other side. And then they started building these so-called traffic calming devices and rotaries, which made it, in my view and in some people's view, not everybody, harder to ride a bicycle. You're riding along and suddenly there's a concrete planter in the middle of the bike lane. What kind of thinking do we need, or is going on or is not going on in places like this?
Not every city planner, and especially not a lot of the traffic engineers type, take all modes of transportation into consideration. How many communities in America don't have sidewalks for pedestrians, or build these super fast freeways through a town, not allowing for cyclists? The truth of the matter is that cyclists fare best when they act and behave as any other vehicle on the road. So if you got a cyclist and they drive their bike, and other people treat that cyclist like another vehicle on the road, which is what the legal entity is of them, then they're perfectly fine. So when you are in a bike lane and you're coming up to an intersection, you should take the lane, move out, be in the middle of the lane so nobody can get around you. That way, when the light turns green, if you're in a bike lane and you go straight ahead and the car's in that lane and makes a right turn and clips you in the infamous right hook, you're going to be the one that's going to be hurt, not the car.
That happens a lot.
It's one of the most prevalent crashes that there are between an automobile and a cyclist. Most crashes do not involve motorists. They are strictly bicycles falling down. League of American Bicyclists has taken all the surveys and found out where do we need to educate. And the fact of the matter is a lot of cyclists need to be taught how to ride safely. Then they need to be taught how to ride in conjunction with motor vehicles.
Well, let's talk about that. What are some of the main things that people need to know about riding safely?
Riding safely is your vehicle. So you pedal your bike as you would drive a car. Always ask yourself, if I was driving a car, would I do this? So you will drive with the flow of traffic. you would not be on the sidewalk. People say, well, when are bicycles stop being on sidewalks? Well, I can pull up an Andy Griffith show from 1962, which has Barney Fife seizing the bicycle of a kid who refused to get off the sidewalk. So it's been a fact that since 1880, in fact, in 1882, Thomas Stevens was arrested in Cincinnati for riding his big front wheel, little back wheel, his penny farthing bike on the sidewalk way back then. So bikes have always belonged in the street.
But and pedestrians on the sidewalk.
Pedestrians on the sidewalk. And when you're on the street, you need to behave like a vehicle. Stop at red lights. Ride on the same way you're flowing with the traffic, which is, in this country, you ride on the right. Now, when you're riding your bike, you want to be on the right side to allow people to pass in their motor vehicles. But you don't want to be riding in the gutter. You should leave 3 feet, 3-4 feet, between you and anything on the right to allow yourself an escape to get out of the way. In Albuquerque, it's the law that cyclists ride on the right as far as practicable, but they are at no time to leave less than 3 feet to their right. Really, when you're out riding on the street, you should ride where the right wheel of a motor vehicle is pedaling. And then that way, when you are out there, they're going to see you. The motorists will see you. If you're off in the gutter, they may not see you. And if they do see you, they may not realize that their mirror will hit you and cause you great injury, and that is known to happen.
So that's another problem, people, bicyclists being hit by mirrors of cars.
Yes. Mirrors, lumber sticking out, whatever it may be, or the car just kind of swerving on over into the area. So be visible. Wear bright clothing.
Let's talk about riding at night and riding in bad weather.
Riding at night, my wife... Legally, you have to have a front light and a rear reflector. And it varies by governmental entity as to how far those are seen. 500 feet to the rear and 1,000 feet to the front is usually a good guideline. That's the minimum. But you don't do what the minimum is. You always go further. So I have headlights. I have taillights. I have several taillights. According to my wife, I look like a frickin' F.U.,
UFO,
yes. And I say, but I mean, you're alive, UFO. I wear panniers on the back of my bike, which are big bags. And those saddle bags, I put lights on them. I usually end up with about 9 lights in the rear. I can be seen, and I'm wide enough that motorists will say, hey, I don't want to run into that because that might cause damage to my car.
How are the lights powered?
Battery and renewable energy batteries. Now, the old days where you used to have a generator that would roll against the side of the wheel,
right,
that was good in the aspect that as you went fast, you'd have light. And when you slowed down, you wouldn't necessarily have light. And
I remember this.
The side of your wheel would wear out. Side of your tire, actually. Nowadays, there are dynamos that are in the hub of the tire, and they will actually keep your light bright for 2 or 3 minutes after you stop. So that's past couple of years, those have become, I wouldn't say popular yet, but have become available that are actually an efficient way of lighting.
What about riding in rain and in snow?
Wonderful. There's not much people out there. There's not many cars out there, and I'm out there on my bike.
Are you?
Oh, I rode in a Siberian blizzard in China one time, and there were no cars out there, and I was on my bike, and I was having a great time. Of course, the wind was from my back, so I was being pushed along, too, in about 2 feet of snow.
A Siberian blizzard. I was going to actually ask you about China, because that seems to be the world capital of bicyclists, or has been in the past when a lot of people didn't have cars.
And it's wonderful. When I lived there for a couple of years, I brought back several bikes with me, and it was great to not be abnormal. I was out on my bike, and I was just one of the masses. And it was really a wonderful feeling.
What did they do for bike safety and bicycle education? What was it like to ride there? Where were you, in Beijing?
I pedaled in Beijing. I actually was living and working outside of Beijing in Tianjin, China, which is about an hour and 20-minute train ride to the southeast. There wasn't much education or anything. No helmets are worn, but they don't go at very fast speeds either. I never saw any bicycle accidents. I saw some car accidents while I was there, but no bicycle on bicycle, no bicycle on cars.
And do they have bike lanes, or are they riding in the traffic with the cars?
Yes. They have bike streets, 2-lane streets that are just for bicycles, and to the left of them would be a two or three lane that are the motorists. And when you want to end up making a left turn, you're going to end up having to get out in with the motorists, the motor vehicles, to make your left turn. So they were all over. There are so many bicycles, they're like a school of fish. And it's great to be in a high-rise building and just watch this mass of cyclists weaving along and cars going along. And cars, the speed limit's 30, they're doing 25, and when there are bicycles around, they're doing 15.
They must operate by the same rules that schools of fish operate. I mean, just physically.
It's amazing to be, because you don't make any conscious decision of having to stay with somebody on the rear, and they just kind of swarm around a vehicle that's trying to work their way on through. It's courtesy. The Chinese culture has got a lot of courtesy in it, and I think that's what is lacking here in the States, the courtesy between the motorists and the cyclists and vice versa.
There are, in some places, these groups of bicyclists that go at certain times of the week or of the day, and large numbers of bicycles get on the street and kind of take over a lane for a while. Do we have any of that in New Mexico?
Are you referring to the clubs that go out riding, the racing teams that go out riding, or the critical mass? Critical mass. There's a group in UNM down in Albuquerque that has once a month, I believe it's on the last Friday of the month, has a critical mass ride. I've never participated in that myself, so I can't give you any of the particulars, but the thought of critical mass is there are no leaders. Somebody decides on a time, and just whoever wants to participate shows up then and just rides, and you show up. Check Craigslist. It's usually on Craigslist. I know it's at the Duck Pond at UNM. And you check there. Go for a nice ride.
There's also, as you said, groups of racing teams and just bicycle clubs.
Mm-hmm. The New Mexico Touring Society, based in Albuquerque, but they ride all over the state. And they have nice social rides of 100 miles or so. They also have some 10-mile rides. And they have easygoing rides and endurance-type rides. So if you want to check out them, go to www.nmts.org, the New Mexico Touring Society.org. And it's they have the routes and maps complete with elevations on their website to get you all over the state and a couple of the routes in surrounding states.
We also have some accommodation on the part of public transportation to bicycles.
Are you referring to the fact that my folding bike's right here?
Your
and I
folding
just
bike
brought
is
it up
right
on
here.
The Rail Runner this morning?
Right.
Yeah, it's really great that the Rail Runner accommodates bicycles. I was up here last week, and there was like 5 bikes in the one car I was in and got to visit with the other cyclists. It was really great, and that's the shape of things to come, because you can take the Rail Runner or the bus, put your bike on the front of the bus, and then head on out with wherever you want to go, and you save hundreds of dollars a month in gasoline that I can then pay for Starbucks.
Or Santa Fe Baking Company soy chai.
Exactly.
We're talking to Craig Degenhart, who is the Black Tie Bicyclist. By the way, how did you get your name, the Black Tie Bicyclist?
My work has me travel all over the place, and I was on assignment in Washington, D.C., and the local cycling club there, advocacy club called the Washington Area Bicycle Association, WABA, was having their fundraising gala at the Finnish Embassy. And the nice invitation said that it's a black tie affair and there'll be bicycle valet parking. So I didn't know any better. I took it at face value, and when I pedaled on up on my bicycle there, I saw the limos with the chauffeurs and the people getting out in the tuxedos and their evening gowns. And there were one or two bicyclists dressed in, not jeans, but normal everyday wear. And I pedaled on up and envisioned a scene from the movie True Lies when Arnold Schwarzenegger gets out of the moat and unzips his swimsuit, his wetsuit, and he's wearing his tuxedo underneath. As I get off the bike, take off my helmet, and take off my reflective cycling jacket, already have my black bow tie on, put the cycling jacket in the panniers, pull out my tuxedo jacket, flip it, put it on, the attendant takes my bicycle, and I walk on into the embassy. And it was a grand time there, enjoying the conversations going around. And people were talking about how bad the traffic was, like getting their limos up to the embassy was bad because of the traffic jam. And I was said, well, I pedaled up Pennsylvania Avenue and cut over 14th and then came up on Connecticut and there wasn't any problems. And they went, oh, you must be the black tie bicyclist. I went, excuse me? We heard about there was one person that showed up on a tuxedo on a bike and wearing a black tie, and that must be you. And I said, yeah, I guess it was. And I went, you know, that's a pretty good title. So since then, I've written safety columns and dressed up as the black tie bicyclist.
You're part of the Bicycle Pedestrian and Equestrian Program.
Every state has, by federal mandate, set up a Bicycle Pedestrian and Equestrian Advisory Committee to advise the state transportation departments on, or transportation highway departments, as they used to be called, on issues that affect them in the entire state. So, yes, I'm one of the most recent appointees to the BPE.
And so how do these all fall together? I mean, bicycling and the needs of bicyclists is one thing, pedestrians, and then horses.
They travel on the roads, too. So you have to make sure that when you're building a trail or a path or a road and you don't want to limit their access. So for horses, you'll end up having to have a special type of rubber foam rather than a concrete, so you have a section under an underpass or something that allows them to have access to. They need to have hitching posts, whereas we need to have bike racks, so we're compatible.
You do a safety check every day before you get on your bike.
Absolutely. When you get in the car, you make sure that all the idiot lights and gauges are right because you don't want to run out of gas, so you always check the gas gauge. You do the same thing on a bicycle. You do your ABC quick check. So that's part of the safety program that we teach from the League of American Bicyclists. And A is for air. You make sure that your air, your tires, your wheels are all in good condition. You check your brakes because you got to be able to stop. And then you check your chains, your cranks, your cassettes, your whole transmission, and make sure it's all clean and in good operating condition. And then you do your quick releases to make sure that the front tire, rear tire, your saddle, sometimes the headset also has quick releases on them. So you make sure that those tight grips are gripped tight. And then you do an overall check and just travel your bike around the parking lot just a little bit to make sure there's no odd noises or anything before you go out on your ride.
Why would your quick release be released?
Sometimes you take the bike out of the train, the bus, or the car, and you put the front wheel back in because it was easier to carry that way, and you forget to snap it in. Sometimes you've left your bike parked out in front of a restaurant or a bookstore or something, and you come back out, and there are people who might just be kids that don't know any better, or might be some mischievous people. Pranksters who will actually release them.
Has that happened to you?
I was in one store one time, came on out, and because I had locked my bike through the front wheel, I saw that, yes, it had been quick released, was clamped, and when it came out, it wasn't. So if I hadn't done my ABC quick check, I could have been pedaling along, hit a bump or a railroad tire, and had my front wheel fall off and maybe have lost a few teeth or
something. Good heavens.
Yes. So you also, besides doing your ABC quick check, you want to make sure you're always wearing a helmet. There's no law that says you have to wear a helmet unless you're under 18. In the state of New Mexico, if you're under the age of 18, I believe it is, it's required that you have a helmet when you ride your bike.
Yeah, we get more hard-headed after 18.
Yeah, unfortunately not hard-headed enough. And a helmet will help protect you should you be in a crash, but it won't prevent a crash. It's what's inside that helmet that will protect you from getting into a crash, and that's why you really need to
brains and reflexes.
Brains and reflexes and training. So take a League of American Bicyclists Traffic Skills 101 course.
What else do you learn in traffic skills?
How to avoid situations that could be harmful to you. So besides ABC quick check, which is a nice convenient thing, should a car make a right turn in front of you, you learn how to do the instant turn to avoid getting underneath a car. And that actually happened to me once, where a pickup truck pulled right in front of me as they went down an alleyway. I did not expect anybody to be turning there, and so I was able to avoid a very serious situation and have it be only a minor situation by doing an instant turn to travel with the vehicle. There's also the quick stop. Use your butt to your advantage. Stick that rear end over the rear tire, and you'll get a lot better braking ability.
Is that right?
Yeah. We do things like the weave, where we learn how to handle the bike in and out of... we don't want you to actually run over rocks, so we'll put half a tennis ball out and create this whole situation of you learning how to maneuver your bike through these turns to do your... work your way up to an instant right turn, a quick stop, all sorts of maneuvers.
What about horns? When somebody is doing something dangerous, when you're in your car, you can blow your horn and sometimes avoid a dangerous situation. What about bicyclists? Do they have horns?
No, they could. They almost should have bells. I know the racing community doesn't like to have any extra weight. Every gram is
right.
Important. They are not allowed to have sirens. I know that that's not permitted on a bicycle. But I have bells on all of mine, and it's just a courtesy thing, especially the bells that ring a long time, ring, ring, rather than the quick ding. Because with that, as I'm coming up on a bike trail, a multi-purpose trail, and there are pedestrians walking, by ringing my bell slowly, it gives a long ring, and it allows the person I'm passing to judge by Doppler effect how close I am and how fast I'm coming up upon them.
Interesting.
And there's just something that everybody thinks a bicycle bell sounds so wonderful. It brings back happy memories from the youth.
For people who are commuting and who basically are not going up into the mountains, but, you know, here in Santa Fe, we do have dirt roads and really all kinds of bicycle terrain. What's the best kind of bicycle to use?
The best kind of bicycle. What's kind of the best kind of food to eat?
Well, I mean, I'm not going to get three bikes. You know, you could have a road
Why
bike
not?
Or a mountain bike.
I've got
bike
over a dozen.
Do you really?
Yes. To which my wife says, how many butts do I have? And I say, because I can only sit on a bike one at a time. And I ask her, how many shoes does she have? And she says, no, it's not the same thing. But really, you have your commuter bike that's able to carry a lot of stuff, like my laptop and all. You have your road bike that you can go fast with. You may have a triathlete bike. You've got your mountain bike. You got your cross bike. I've got a Chinese tricycle that I can haul the neighbor kids around. And got the bike that you can take the
grocery store. Do you do your grocery shopping on that?
Yeah. It's wonderful. You can bring hundreds of dollars worth of grocery, which maybe not so good because groceries don't cost so much. But anyway, yes, hundreds of dollars of groceries on the bicycle. And I feel healthier when I've done it.
There are those bicycles. There's somebody in my neighborhood who rides one that has some kind. It's a bicycle, but it has some kind of little motor on it also.
Electric motors are attached to some bicycles. And as long as they're not able to go over 20 miles an hour, I believe it is, they are considered a bicycle and can do everything, be on the roads with bicycles. There's some question on some of the trails where it says no motorized vehicles permitted, if that will actually allow them. My personal opinion is I'm on the bike for my health and to help the environment. Adding a motor just kind of cuts out a lot of it. It makes some noise. It doesn't have me pedaling as much, so I'm not getting the full exercise. I'll give me the old-fashioned kind.
Okay, so you're an enthusiast, and you've got a dozen bikes, and most of us don't. Most of us, if we're going to, you know, somebody's listening to this show and gets inspired, even I might get inspired to get a bicycle. I've got some ancient bicycle in my closet, which probably needs to go back to its maker. But if somebody's going to get one bike for commuting and going around town, but being on multiple terrain?
It's a case of, yes, you want to find out what you're going to be using your bike for, and go to a good, reputable, independent bike dealer, and they'll be able to help you select the right bike. My wife has come into the cycling world, and she has rides the recreational trails and occasionally goes to the grocery store type. So for her, getting back into it, there's a new style of cruiser bike that is very comfortable to ride. Has multi-gears, which here in New Mexico, you really need a bike that has multiple gears because we got so many hills. Those gears really make it a lot easier. So she has from the Electra company, as in the goddess of light and not electric motor, but an Electra Townie with its copyrighted flat foot technology. It makes it real easy to ride and be comfortable on. It's got a low center of gravity. It's not a recumbent, but it looks like an old cruiser, and it's just a very fun ride for her. And that's probably the one that I've I use that when I am just going tootling around town or going off-road because they have the wider tires.
It's just about time to go. Is there anything else that you want to let people know about bicycle safety and about getting involved with bicycling for both sport and commuting and health and all of it?
Gosh, are we done already? So much more to say. Bike ABQ meets in Albuquerque. We're the cycling advocacy group. We meet on the fourth Tuesday of the month, usually at C&M. Go to bikeabq.org for information about us. For information on classes and the national issues, go to the League of American Bicyclists at bikeleague.org. For just some fun rides around or to try to get back into riding, go to the New Mexico Touring Society at nmts.org. And they have a list of rides. They ride every day.
And there's some pamphlets, which you have kindly brought to me, Bicycling Street Smarts and Bicycle Maps of Santa Fe and Albuquerque. And people can get their hands on those.
Most of the maps are available at most bike stores. And for the motorists out there, remember that cyclists are humans too, and we're your brothers and sisters and sons and daughters. And cyclists fare best when they act and are treated as drivers of vehicles. So cyclists, please stop at the stop signs. Would you run it in a red car if you're driving a car or run a red light? No. And do the speed limit. Don't exceed the speed limit. And just be kind and safe and gentle with everybody. And be aware that in June 2010, the League of American Bicyclists National Bike Rally will be held in Albuquerque. Mm. And we will be, hopefully, we're inviting President Obama to come do the ribbon cutting on the bike pedestrian bridge over the Rio Grande in Albuquerque. And we're talking about setting up a nice little ride on the Rail Runner to bring some of those cyclists up here to Santa Fe to travel around your fair city.
So, bike rally, and we'll check it out in 2010, next year.
June 6, 2010. Probably 5th, 6th, and 7th.
Craig Degenhart is the Black Tie Bicyclist. Thanks so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
It's been my pleasure. Pedal safely.
I'm delighted to welcome back to the show Bridget Lindquist. She's the Executive Director of the Espanola Valley Humane Society. And Nina Chiotasso, who is the Community Relations Director there. Welcome, ladies, to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte.
Thank
How
you
are
for
you?
Having us.
It's good to have you, as always. We're here to talk about the Kitten Festival. Because it's an animal subject and we just can't resist here on the Radio Cafe.
You're one of our huge animal supporters, and I love what you do for the local shelters. You know, every time this year we have a huge influx of kittens. It's just spring season hits, and next thing you know, we go from 50 to about, in this case, 293. Keep in mind
you
that
you have 293 kittens?
Yeah, it's appalling, isn't it? Well, and to be fair, it's a mix of kittens and cats, but let's say 90% are kittens.
Wow.
We got hit about a month and a half ago, and our little shelter really only accommodates 50 to 60 cats comfortably. So we're very grateful for a fostering network that expands our capacity, multiplies our capacity by four, and yet we're anxious to get these cats into loving homes as quickly as possible, partly to give our foster parents a reprieve, and honestly, partly just to get these cats into a better situation. So that's where Nina comes in. She, of course, is in charge of everything that doesn't happen at the shelter. That's a pretty big bailiwick when you think about it.
Everything that doesn't happen at this animal shelter. That's pretty big.
Things here and there, yeah. So humane education, mobile adoption events, special programs, volunteers, things like that. But right now my focus is 100% cats and kittens. The Kitten Festival is going to be New Mexico's largest all-feline adoption event. So we're bringing about 100 cats and kittens to this event, which will reduce the load on some of our foster parents and quite a bit on the shelter. Our adoption room only accommodates about 30 cats and kittens, so only 30 are on display at any time. This is going to, you know, we'll have 30 still at the shelter on display, but then we'll have an additional 100 down at Petco this weekend. From 9 to 4, we're going to have every size and shape of cat and kitten you can imagine. So
Petco in Santa Fe?
Yes,
on
here
Cerrios
in Santa Fe.
Road.
Yes, Cerrios. It'll be at the corner of St. Michael's and Cerrios. So we'd love to have a line of folks outside the door starting when we get there at 9, because unless all these kitties get adopted, we really don't have a place to put them at the shelter.
And so there are kittens. How do they come to you?
Primarily, people have litters that they cannot take care of. Their cats are not spayed, and cats can have up to 3 litters comfortably a year. So if one cat is having 3 litters a year, that's already putting somewhere around 20 kittens from one single cat in our care. We don't have any additional resources to stop those people from breeding if they will not bring the cats to us. So education is key, but until they bring us the cats to get them spayed and neutered, which we do at the shelter, we just are faced with more and more of these kittens.
Yeah.
Do people care as much about getting a purebred cat as they do getting a purebred dog? In other words, there are some people who just say, I need to have a Jack Russell Terrier or a German Shepherd or whatever. A lot of cats, especially around here, are just cats.
Well, they're not just cats, but they are. They're generally your mixed breed cat. And I would say overall, that's not usually the case. But we do get a fair number of Siamese cats or Himalayans, once in a while a Persian, something like that. But usually people are more willing to go on personality of a cat. However, we do see that cats that are darker in color, so black and white tuxedo cats or black cats, are much slower to get adopted than something, you know, fluffy and white and light colored or unusual looking. So,
really?
Yes, absolutely.
Is that prejudices about a black cat crossing your path or something?
I think there's a little bit of superstition involved, but a lot of it, I think, is these cats just don't stand out in the cage. They're in these, you know, these dark little cubes, and people just pass right by the cage if the cat's not actively, you know, reaching its paw out, looking for that, you know, that special someone. So it's, in some ways, it's just a visual issue.
Yeah, and a good example of that is Ace. He's a 5-year-old tuxedo cat that we've had at the shelter since January, and we're hoping, he should become our poster child, I think, for this marathon event. We're hoping to get him placed after, you know, languishing for 7 months. It's a long time to spend in any shelter.
Absolutely, and he's great with kids. He's fabulous with other cats. He grooms the other cats in the cat room. he's a really easygoing guy, and he'd love just a big old couch to spend his days on rather than staying inside that metal cage.
The nice thing about cats as compared to dogs is that they require very little actual work on the part of the owner.
Yeah.
You don't have to walk them.
No,
all you have to do is feed them and occasionally clean their litter box.
Yeah, and if they should happen to brush up against you and, you know, exchange a moment of affection, well, that's a good thing.
Yep, and it's easier to have more than one cat, too, I think, than it is to have more than one dog.
I'm learning that the hard way. This is a 3-cat, 2-dog household that sits in front of you. How many animals are you up to now, Mary Charlotte?
Oh, I just have 3 small dogs.
Oh, just.
And no cats, because one of the dogs would eat them if they came in.
Yeah.
Well, we have one cat that would probably be much larger than any of your dogs. His name is Orange Tom. He's probably about a 20-pounder, long hair, orange male, very, very friendly, sturdy boy. but I don't think he would take any bull from any dogs either. So if you're looking for a feline addition, he might be a good one.
I mean, that sounds like some entertainment for the whole family.
Yeah.
I'm just so impressed that he came to mind.
Yeah.
It's like, go ahead, sell Orange Tom. We can do this.
Go ahead, now tell us about some of your other cats. You've named them.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Everybody has names. You know, they're not just numbers. Everyone has personality, and everyone has, you know, a story when they come to us. So it's a matter of getting to know that story and who they are and finding a good match for them. Figaro is one of my personal favorites. I'm a little biased. I was at the shelter when he came in a Tupperware box. No air holes poked. 2 children said they had found him. We suspect that it was actually their cat, and they knew that what he had going on had been going on for way too long. So when you open the box, you knew that there was something wrong with this cat because he was not moving. So it turned out that he had an embedded collar, which means that the collar was put on him as a very tiny kitten. It had actually wrapped around his leg and had been there for so long that he was in very, very serious condition. So our vet came in on a Sunday afternoon basically do an emergency procedure to remove the collar from under his leg and around his neck, put him back together, but the recovery was a very, very long process for him. So he arrived when he was probably 8 or 10 weeks old, and now he's about 7 or 8 months old, and he's at that hard-to-place age because he's a little bit of a teenager, and he'd like to romp and play, but he's not that sweet and snuggly teeny kitten that everybody wants.
Is he fully recovered?
He's fully recovered, yeah. She was actually able to put his leg back in place that he should have no complications. His fur has grown entirely back over it, so he has no scars. All he has is, you know, the story behind it as to why he's still there, and he's been there for probably about 5 months now. So
the story, which he will gladly tell you if you speak cat.
Exactly, if you speak cat, or if you speak to one of us, we'd be happy to tell you. But he's a beautiful boy, long hair, black and white, big golden eyes, really, really sweet guy, and he just needs a chance because really he's been raised at the shelter, and that's not what we want for any of our kitties.
So it's a great big cat festival, kitten festival happening this coming weekend, and Saturday, July 25th at Petco as well. Is that the main location?
That's the only location. Yep, it's going to be in Petco. We will be inside. There's going to be goodies for everybody who comes. Every cat will be spayed or neutered and vaccinated, dewormed. Adoption fee for everybody is going to be $40, kittens and cats. And they go home with you right there. So we would love to go home empty-handed.
Can you get two for the price of one?
No, I don't think so. But
we're not going to do a fire sale as it goes on.
Yeah, no. We, okay. I don't like to use the term sale when it comes to, you know, living things. But but we will. You know, we'll do what we can to get as many of them adopted as possible.
And if you're not in the market for a cat, one other way you could help is to drop by some litter or cat food. You can imagine with 300 cats, we're going through it like water right now. And we're kind of at a desperate state, crisis state, in terms of food litter for cats. So drop by any sort of dry product at Petco. There's a bin there to receive it. You can come anytime they're open and support this project.
Absolutely. And cat toys are also welcome.
Oh,
these guys get a little bit bored when they're in these cages all day long.
That's
so
right.
If you pick up a $2 pack of little fur mice, that would really make a kitty's day. So you can also drop those things off at Petco.
Bridget Lindquist is the executive director of the Española Valley Humane Society. Nina Chiotasso is with that wonderful organization as well. And what is your website?
Our website is evalleyshelter.org. If you want to call the shelter, you can reach us at 753-8662. But go check out our website. It's a great way to look around for the right animal. Most of the cats you see displayed there will be at Petco on Saturday.
Excellent. Thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
I'm very happy now to welcome Ulla Peterson. She's the founder and director of the Kindred Spirits Animal Sanctuary. Welcome, Ulla.
Thank you so much, Miss Charlotte.
Now, you were just here a few months ago, but there's an event coming up this weekend that we just wanted to make sure to give you a few minutes to talk about. First of all, the Kindred Spirits Animal Sanctuary. It's an elder care. It's a hospice for dogs, horses, and poultry. But as you have often said, and as I have often witnessed, it's a really wonderful, happy place, even for these apparently unadoptable pets who have had some real problems in their lives.
Right. They come, we have horses and dogs and poultry, and we have 20 dogs. They don't live in cages, they live family style, so we do a lot of good housekeeping, and we have wonderful volunteers to help us, and we do need more volunteers. But yes, it's a happy place, and that's often something that visitors comment on, that they're surprised because they expect sort of a dreary maybe place. But I call them our old folks. They have various kind of disabilities or ailments, and some are limping around a little bit, but they're happy. And we have a really good environment for them. We are all ecologically sound. There's trees and barns, and they interact with our visitors and volunteers. They have our own sense of community. And we do a lot of what we call brush and cuddle. So they get a sense that they're really wanted. And this is their home for the rest of their lives. Some are with us for a very short time because it is their time to go, but they get a chance to feel loved and cared for. And also, we do a lot of education, and we have workshops on how to care for the elder animals, and we have school groups coming out, and young people, older people, so we try and educate about, and also why it's important to care for our older folks, whether they're animals or whether they're people. And I'm a nurse myself, so I see it in our people population too, that there's a real need to appreciate our seniors and care for them.
when you give workshops on caring for elder pets, there are probably many of our listeners who do have elder pets. What are some things that they need to know about caring for them?
Okay, well, we have workshops on end-of-life care. And so how to care for instance, if the focus is on dogs, how to care for them, how to know what pain looks like, for instance. What does a seizure
look like? Yeah, because they're so stoic.
They're so stoic, and they're not going to tell you. It's in their genes, and bless their hearts, it's in their genes. They're not going to tell you that they have pain unless it's just absolutely howling, screaming pain. And then, of course, you will know. But how to do real good assessments so that you can develop a really good relationship with your vet that really supports your animals so that you are on the same page with your vet. And we have another workshop on nutrition. We really believe in good nutrition that fosters wellness. No matter how long you have left it, but you have a sense of wellness in your life. And so we put resources into nutrition and good supplements, and we have relatively fewer vet bills that way and much better quality of life. We have another workshop that's called Wills and Estate Planning for pets and their pet families, of course, so that if the pet outlives their family, that there is some provisions made both for their care and for their financial support.
So a lot of people have pets, the people who themselves are old, and when they die, yeah, sometimes those pets are just abandoned.
That's correct. A lot of them, we get a lot of calls every day, and many of those calls are really from situations where whoever was their main caregiver in that family either passed away or maybe had a terrible accident. And it doesn't have to be just older people. It could really be younger people,
too. It could be anybody.
It could be anybody. If you have the responsibility for a pet, just like we have godparents for our children.
We have dog parents.
We have dog parents, yeah. Dog godparents. And for your horses, or in this case, we have poultry also. Whatever you are responsible for, that there is some kind of backup system also that is legally enforceable. So that's just some of the areas. We have one in wellness care, and these are taught by our veterinarians and myself. I'm a nurse and a bereavement counselor. And and they're well attended. So it's really something that I'm happy to see that is growing, the interest in caring for our seniors, whether they be people or animals.
So you're doing an art show this weekend from 10 to 4 at the Kindred Spirits Animal Sanctuary, which is on Highway 14, just south of Santa Fe. And in this art show, you've got all sorts of artists who actually make portraits of animals.
Yeah, portraits or different kinds of portrayals, anyway, of some of our seniors and some of others. And we have four artists this year, and it's a reunion of artists that have shown with us in the past. We usually only have one artist showing, and so this is a reunion, and it's... there's something very magic about art and our old folks, as I think of them. And there's something about art being a real, giving a real voice to who they are, to their soul quality. Most of them come from just very traumatic situations. And if the artist can capture that and how they have often come through this transformation once they feel safe and loved and cared for and wanted, there's something very magical and very life-enriching and life-affirming about that.
Right.
I think that goes across all borders and just for our lives in general. It's a very uplifting kind of thing. Sometimes it's just fun and happy. And sometimes it has other feelings in it, but it's just something I have found over the years is a very magical quality, and I love to see all that artwork around the barns.
So that's happening this weekend, this Saturday?
Yeah.
From 10 to 4 in the afternoon. It's a family event. There's no charge, and young people and everybody are encouraged to show up and just check the place out. The last time I was there a couple of months ago, I went with some friends, one of whom was 9 years old, and she fell in love with the place and is still trying to figure out how to volunteer there. Yeah. And so it's just a very magical, I have to say, Ulla, I really want to appreciate the soul and loving kindness that you have put into that place, because it's evident in every inch of the place, including where trees have been planted that make wonderful shade and little altars for the deceased animals and all of these little touches that make the place loving both to the animals who are there and to the people who populate the place as well, either as volunteers or people who help to feed the animals and just visitors from the outside.
Well, thank you so much.
Ulla Peterson is founder and director of the Kindred Spirits Animal Sanctuary. They're at 3749A Highway 14 in Santa Fe. You can find them on the web at kindredspiritsnm.org, and you can call at 471-5366. You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, and we are podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime that you want to, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. You can email me at radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, the Jazz Experience.